in case you missed it, Kansas City had a really, really big party. 800,000 people collected in downtown Kansas City from Power and Light, Sprint Center, Union Station to celebrate an enormous sports victory in this city. And I think it was a little bit of overkill. Honestly, the Chiefs winning in London was a big deal. But I don't know if 800,000 people needed to celebrate it. Welcome to Roughing the Kicker. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, in Kansas City, where we have a champion baseball team and a football team who won earlier on Sunday morning. In fact, the Chiefs laid down a whooping over in London against the pitiful Detroit Lions. But the Chiefs looked very good against a pitiful team. That's what good teams do when they play far inferior ones, and that's what happened. You can always get in touch with the show. We'll get to me on Twitter at JB Briscoe or Facebook.com/RTK Show if you have any comments, questions, or anything you want to talk about. But now let's talk about some football and where the Chiefs currently stand after this big victory. In London, Kansas City Chiefs 45, Detroit Lions 10. Really, all across the board, this was a superbly executed game by the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the Lions fall to 1-7. The Chiefs go up to 3-5. But last week on the show, I asked, what do Chiefs fans look for now? What do we root for? What do we watch for? What do we hope for? I think this game brought a few of those factors for us. And one thing that is that simultaneously encouraging and infuriating is this game this week against the Detroit Lions at 8:30 in the morning or whenever they kicked off local time in London, we finally saw what the Kansas City Chiefs were supposed to be this year. Even against a bad team. Because if you would have said at the beginning of the year, the Chiefs are going to be facing a 1-6 team, and everything's going to go right, what's going to happen? You say, well, this team's pretty good. They ought to blow them out. They ought to have a nice blowout against a bad team. And that's something that the Chiefs, I feel like, haven't done very consistently. I mean, especially this year. The Chicago Bears are not a good football team, and they lost at home. The Chiefs did what they needed to do in this game, and it looked like what we expected in the preseason. Alex Smith, his numbers are not gaudy, but he threw a couple of touchdowns. He ran very, very well. I'll talk about everything more specifically in a second, but just as an overview, Smith played very well. Charcandrick West had over 100 all-purpose yards, almost 100 yards rushing for the second straight week. Travis Kelce had at least one drive where he basically dictated the pace. The defense played extremely well. Marcus Peters said he wanted to cover Calvin Johnson. He's in the game, you know, to cover the best receivers. Well, he did, and he did a fantastic job. Calvin Johnson caught 5 passes for 85 yards in this game and led the Lions in receiving. Peters and Sean Smith played very, very well. An interesting point that I didn't even think of until I was talking with someone else sometime after the game is I'm not even sure who got the majority of the third cornerback snaps because his name didn't get called very often, which was a lovely fact because that slot guy has been a pain this whole season so far. So if it's a platoon of Steven Nelson, Jamel Fleming, I believe Marcus Cooper was inactive for this game. But if it's a kind of a platoon between those guys and they find some consistency in there, it's a fantastic thing for this defense. So this defense, they got pressure. I think they were 6 sacks in this game. This is exactly what we wanted to see, and if we would have seen this more consistently, right now I think we'd be looking at this team, even if, God, this is so, if this doesn't make you sad as a Chiefs fan, you're not paying attention, I guess, because this makes me sad. If the Chiefs win 2 games at home that they should have absolutely won against the Broncos and against the Bears, we're looking at this team going, all right, here comes the wild card spot. Division's probably not going to happen, but we've got a clear path to the wild card. And now the Chiefs have an uphill battle. Though, after the Pittsburgh Steelers lost, the Chiefs are 1 game behind them for a wild card position, and the Chiefs have the tiebreaker, and the Chiefs are obviously also behind the Oakland Raiders, who I didn't see being this good, but they're a good football team. So now let's get into the actual game. Let's look at a little play-by-play, a little bit of the flow of the game, and see why this game went so well and how the Chiefs overcame some of the things that you would have expected to have been, you know, causing real difficulties. along the way. Mike DeVito was inactive, and Ben Grubbs was inactive. Strange inactive was James O'Shaughnessy, the tight end, the draft pick. Brian Parker got some work at tight end, which was odd, and Demetrius Harris got the number two tight end work. We don't know still why O'Shaughnessy was inactive as of the recording of this podcast on, Wednesday night? On Wednesday night, I don't know why O'Shaughnessy was inactive. We'd never heard much about him being injured, but it seems kind of strange to make him inactive for the sake of Brian Parker. So maybe there's something else going on there. But the biggest thing, as I said, DeVito being inactive almost really went unnoticed, at least from my perspective, because the Chiefs' defense played so well. The D-line, the linebackers, the secondary, it was a complete unit effort for the defense. So Mike DeVito was essentially not missed. And Ben Grubbs, the fifth-round pick the Chiefs gave up for Ben Grubbs seemed like the best trade the Chiefs could have possibly made in the offseason. That left guard spot needed to be locked down, and Ben Grubbs was going to be the guy to do it. Obviously, on the downslope of his career, they restructured his contract, but that was that felt like a very important kind of small move. But he missed this game, and this might have been the best the offensive line looked all season, and for several reasons. Eric Fisher back at left tackle. Jeff Allen moved to left guard, which scared me before the game because Jeff Allen had a great game at right tackle. But Allen moves to left guard beside Eric Fisher. Center still Mitch Morse. Right guard was LDT. Right tackle was Ja Reed. That's how far Donald Stevenson has fallen on this depth chart. And I'm no huge fan of LDT at his current stage in his career. They talked on the broadcast about, you know, having some great physical tools and you know, being extremely smart and everything. And I will take that at face value. I'll accept that. But he's not ready yet. So I wonder now, I guess before we get to the official breakdown of the game, I'm going to go ahead and take my tangent now on the offensive line. The offensive line played very, very well with that lineup that I just gave you. Now what do the Chiefs do? Eric Fisher is playing, he's playing well at left tackle. He's playing very well. I'd probably go so far to say at this point he might be the Chiefs' best lineman over the last 4 weeks or so. But Jeff Allen last week had a very good game at right tackle, and this week against the Lions played a very, very good left guard. That Fisher-Allen left side of the offensive line, developing. I said in the preseason I really liked Eric Fisher this year, and that looked pretty dumb for a while. But that injury at the beginning of the year, I think, really set him back, especially in public perception. And then getting moved to the right side, I don't know why that happened. I understood. I took a positive spin on it when it happened. Tried to put a more finesse guy at left tackle and a more staunch blocker in Eric Fisher on the right side. I saw the logic in that, but it obviously didn't pan out at all. And now Fisher back on the left side looks more comfortable and more effective. And as I just said, Jeff Allen looks great at left guard. That might even be. I would not be concerned the Chiefs will take some linemen early in the draft or aggressively in free agency, because they should. That does not scare me like they would waste time, money, and effort on that. They won't. It'll be worth it. This offensive line is maybe average, maybe. And in the NFL, as we saw in this game, when the offensive line starts to look better, everything around the team starts to look better. The two best games the Chiefs have had on offense have been the last 2 weeks, by the eyeball test, if you'll give me that. And those weeks came without Jamaal Charles. One of those weeks came without Jeremy Maclin. It's a team sport. And it has so much to do with the offensive line. And I usually only say that in a negative context. When I say, stop flinging every emotion at Alex Smith. He can't perform behind a completely porous offensive line, is how I usually talk about the O-line. And in this case, we're going to take it from the other direction and say, look at this. Charkandrick West is playing very well. Alex Smith looks like kind of ceiling level Alex Smith, maybe not quite that high yet, but a much improved Alex Smith that can certainly win football games. That's because the offensive line is the best that it's been. That's important. I cannot stress enough how important an offensive line on a football team is. When the offensive line is not performing well, and you have an average quarterback with maybe, I don't know how many legitimate weapons are on this team. De'Anthony Thomas had a great game, one of his best games as a Chief. But you have Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce. I like Charcandrick West a lot, but he's not a proven weapon right now. Neither is De'Anthony Thomas, anybody else. So Alex Smith, you could argue, has two weapons. And he's an average quarterback. If that's what your team looks like, you've got to give that team a good offensive line. It happened here. The Chiefs scored upwards of 40 points. There's a reason for that. It's because the offensive line matters. It's important. A good offensive line makes everything look better. A bad offensive line makes everything look worse. It's just going to magnify what's already there. If Smith is playing poorly and the offensive line is playing poorly, Alex Smith will look horrific. He'll look horrific. Alex Smith is not going to make a bad Alex Smith is not going to make a bad offensive line look good. And God, if you watch Sunday Night Football, which I'll have to touch on later, Aaron Rodgers couldn't make anything on his offense look good against a really good defense. But you put Alex Smith, an average quarterback in my opinion, behind a good offensive line or an average offensive line. You put Alex Smith behind an average offensive line against a pretty crummy defense like what happened on Sunday, 45 points. It's not a coincidence. The offensive line, when the offensive line wins the battles in the trenches, the rest of the offense looks much better. That's on purpose. That's how it works. That's a big deal for the Chiefs. I don't know what to do with Ben Grubbs. I don't know. I would like to see Ben Grubbs try to play right guard at this point because I don't want to break up Eric Fisher and Jeff Allen on the left side. I want them to continue as they are and see how that plays out for a little while. See if you can put Ben Grubbs on the right side, Ja Reed to his right, Mitch Morse in the middle, Fisher and Allen on the left. I think right now that's the best composed offensive line the Chiefs can put out there depending on how Grubbs is at the right side. And if Allen has to play right guard, I guess that's an option, although I think Jeff Allen's a better right tackle than Ja Reed is. So I would go out of my way to keep Fisher and Allen together if at all possible. If that's not going to happen, we'll probably see it go Fisher, Grubbs, Morse, LDT, Allen from left to right, and I'm not stoked about that. Overall, though, I think this is a great starting point to look at this game because the offensive line performed pretty well throughout this game in a way they haven't yet this year, and the rest of the offense followed in its footsteps. All right, sorry for the false advertising a second ago. Now let's look at the game, break it down as it went. Lions scored first, put together a drive, but a Ron Parker sack and a well-read play on third down kept the Lions to 3. The Chiefs then put together a drive of their own, closed it off with an in-motion handoff to De'Anthony Thomas that he took for a touchdown with two really great blocks around the edge. Again, that offensive line had a great day. It started right there. Usually the plays where Thomas goes in motion and there's a fake handoff and a handoff. It usually doesn't end up in Thomas's hands, or whenever it does, the offensive line doesn't get the breaks. But it's usually, I think, a fake. This is the kind of stuff that they can set up when they have De'Anthony Thomas. And something that I think the Chiefs are forced to do a little more with Jamaal Charles absent. Again, I really like Charcandrick West, and if I got one thing right in the preseason, it's that give me West over Nile Davis every day of the week. Although Davis, again, as a one-cut kind of runner, if he gets a hole and just has to run through it, is a nice back. But as a full running back who has to read the blocks and everything, Charcandrick West has their future in the league. But you got other weapons. You want to use them here. Don't give everything to West. Mix it up some. De'Anthony Thomas gets the first touchdown for the Chiefs. Again, just a good drive that ended in an actual touchdown. That's how you start a game. Chiefs defense forced a punt, and then Charcandrick West had a nice play. Then on second and one, a screen dump off thing, lost 3, and then Smith got sacked on the next play, and at that point, the joy of the first touchdown pretty much disintegrated. I hate it when the Chiefs don't run the ball in these situations. On second and one, I think it's a pretty common coaching decision to try to take a deep shot on second and one, you know, throw it 20 yards down the field or longer and see what you can come up with, because if it's incomplete, it's third and one and you can run it. Don't ever throw the ball backwards on second and one. Throw it deep or run the ball if you just want to get the first down. But don't do the screen thing. Chiefs had to punt. Chiefs had the Lions down again, ending with a 3-and-out on a DJ/D Ford sack. I believe the full credit went to Derek Johnson, but D Ford was there in the scrum as well. Just a fantastic play, second sack of the day for the defense. It looked pretty obvious pretty early on that the defense was going to have its way with the Lions offensive line.
offensive lines are important. They make quarterbacks look better or worse. I really think they're important. You're home for all of your podcasting offensive line talk. This is Roughing the Kicker. I'm Joshua Briscoe on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
Chiefs pass rush was, again, looking like the Chiefs pass rush that we expected in the preseason. And then the next drive was, in my opinion, the drive of the day. Alex Smith busts out a 49-yard run, which looked like a healthy Robert Griffin in his rookie season, just motoring. And then he later, on 3rd and 10, on the 12-yard line, he scrambles again after a play just kind of falls apart and scores on a 12-yard rushing touchdown. And again, this is a theme throughout this game. We saw what the defense can do when it's good. We saw on that drive the weird things that Alex Smith can do when things are going well. Also, my favorite stat from Sunday is that Alex Smith not only threw for more yards than Aaron Rodgers did when in the Packers game against the Broncos, Alex Smith rushed for more yards on Sunday, 78, than Aaron Rodgers passed for, 76. That stat from Rifo18 on Twitter. I just think that's it. I think that's an incredible statistic. Football is weird. So Smith carries a drive with his legs, and then right on the other side of it, Sean Smith picks off Matt Stafford. Without question at that point in the game, and I would say at the end of the game, Alex Smith just outplayed Matt Stafford. And it wasn't necessarily a battle of quarterbacks, because the Chiefs in general were by far the better team in really every facet of the game. But just looking at the quarterbacks, Alex Smith looked like the better one. Also, is something I know every Chiefs fan is probably aware of, Colin Kaepernick has been benched in San Francisco, and Alex Smith is still starting. I don't understand the NFL or quarterbacks. It's a bizarre league. The Chiefs are starting Alex Smith at quarterback, and Alex Smith's old team, who traded him away, is starting Blaine Gabbert. So, I don't know how the NFL happens. It's the best reality show on the planet. So the Chiefs put together a little bit of a drive off of Smith's pick of Stafford, stalls, it ends with a field goal, and then Ron Parker tips a pass up in the air, which Justin Houston picks off from Matt Stafford. The Chiefs put together another really nice drive that ends with a fantastic run from Charkandrick West for the touchdown to make the score 24-3. I've had a GIF up for the last several days from at RealMNChiefsFan on Twitter of that Charkandrick West run. He says, everything about this touchdown run is gorgeous. The whole offensive line, West vision/cuts, but Fisher especially makes me smile. By the time Charkandrick West hits the hole, which is basically right up, essentially supposed to be right up the middle, by the time he hits that hole, Eric Fisher has moved his guy to the right, basically to the right tackle spot, but about 3 yards downfield. But the whole offensive line, I'm just watching it on repeat. Jeff Allen picks up a guy down the field. Mitch Morse slides his guy right over to the side. Ja Reed doesn't have a huge role in the play, but he's hitting guys. The tight ends even hold up just enough. Travis Kelce gets moved back, but he gets his guy behind West before it's too late. West pauses. He has that patience that makes Le'Veon Bell great. Really a fantastic cut from West as Mitch Morse starts to slide back. He steps to the right and then cuts it back up the middle, slides through a couple of defenders one more time for the score. It was a really, really superb run by Charkandrick West, and that's the kind of reason that I think he's a running back with a future. I'm not willing to say that he is the successor to Jamaal Charles. I don't know that. But I don't dislike Niall Davis, so I say kind of negative things about him a lot, and I don't mean to. But looking at this run that West has, I see what Niall Davis would do here, and it wouldn't have resulted in a touchdown. There's a couple of cuts and a couple of things that West sees here that isn't in Davis's natural repertoire yet. Now, if he can develop that, he could be a heck of a running back. But West really seems to have a full package right now. So, gushing about that touchdown run and the performance of the offensive line being really evident there. 24-3, offensive line's playing well, Smith is playing well, West looks great. The play calling at this point and continuously was working, with the exception of that one play I yelled about earlier. And then on defense, Ron Parker gets a second sack, his second sack, I should say. Tamba Hali gets an unofficial sack because he got a sack, but there was a holding penalty the Chiefs accepted over the sack. Then Dontari Poe gets one, which is the team's fourth official sack of the day, not counting Tamba's. And then the Chiefs, before halftime, were calling timeouts to get the ball back. And that's something that I don't think this team has had the confidence to do in a little while. Whenever the Chiefs call timeouts to try to get the ball back, it seems like, to me anyway, bad things happen. Like, oh, you give Jay Cutler an extra 20 seconds, and oh, look at that, he found his guy down the field. Or, especially against Peyton Manning, you don't give Peyton Manning an extra millisecond. So calling timeouts to try to get the ball back before halftime to try to add to the lead, it's kind of a gutsy thing the Chiefs don't usually do, or at least Andy Reid, I would say, doesn't usually do. And then when they get the ball back on offense, a personal foul, unnecessary roughness penalty went against Jeff Allen. And Terez Paylor tweeted that Allen appears to be becoming the enforcer of the offensive line, which he said is certainly not a bad thing. And I couldn't agree more. As this offensive line develops, an offensive line has to have an attitude. Now, I'm not saying for a second the kind of attitude that you'd equate with a bad Raiders teams or the Bengals a handful of years ago. Not like that. And one unnecessary roughness penalty is fine, but more than that, it starts to get ridiculous. Not the kind of attitude that gets your team into bad situations and all of a sudden you're looking at 3rd and 25 because you can't keep your hands to yourself. But there has to be a meanness and a grit to an offensive line, especially when you're going up against NFL competition and superior NFL competition, like when the Chiefs play the Broncos after the bye week. So to have kind of an enforcer of sorts is fantastic. And last week, we saw Eric Fisher also get a penalty for standing up for a teammate who the defense was, you know, trying to twist his ankle or whatever. To have that attitude back, not only for the offensive line, but then as it flows to the offensive line, then to the entire offense and to the entire team, that needs to happen. That needs to be there for a successful team. You can't have a passive offensive line. But an offensive line is basically, I would say, not allowed to have an attitude if they stink. So I think it shows some confidence that this offensive line desperately needed. On the other side of the ball, Sean Smith and Marcus Peters wholly shut down Calvin Johnson, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And then at halftime, I wrote a little bit from my perspective at that exact moment. I said, this is the offense, defense, and special teams that we expected in the preseason. It's against a bad team in this case, so it's hard to judge how far the Chiefs have come so far, but this is the half of football the Chiefs needed to prove that they could play. And then it turned into this entire game. This is the kind of game the Chiefs needed against a bad team. Going to London is a funky thing to do. Not every team has done it so far. This is the first time the Chiefs have gone to have a game in London. The first time Andy Reid has played in London, or coached in London. A lot of things can go wrong. And maybe you think you're playing a desperate team with the Lions. Now they're beyond desperate, it's over. Maybe you think you're playing a desperate team, or just playing a team with some talent. Matt Stafford and Calvin Johnson, and you can say Amir Abdullah, talented players. Talented players. And whenever you meet up with talented players in a weird situation, it's the NFL, stuff happens. But to show this well-rounded game, this dominant game, I didn't expect it. I don't think anybody expected the Chiefs to go win by 35 points. And to show that they can do this against a bad team, I want to say it's important. I don't know if I can say it's important until we're considering a playoff conversation. But for the team, in a small view, that's an important thing to prove to themselves. Second half, another great drive strung together by Macklin's first catch of the game, punctuated by Smith taking a huge hit and absolutely delivering a dart to Travis Kelce. And again, Smith pops right back up. It's okay to take a hit if your offense is protecting you throughout the game. If you have faith in your offensive line, then you can afford to step up and take one big hit for the sake of delivering a strike down the field a little ways. That's what Alex Smith did. If that was the 15th time he had been hit in the game, you're not going to make that throw. You're going to throw it out of bounds. You're going to sail it, maybe get it picked off, or tuck it and take the sack. But he got some faith in his offensive line there, stepped up and took the hit, delivered the strike. It was a fantastic play. And then popped right back up. Again, some attitude developed with this team, and this team had been straight up passive through especially the Bears and Vikings game. I think this team essentially lost its spirit after the Broncos loss and then getting stepped on by the Bengals and the Packers. So getting a little spunk back, even against a bad team, I will take. And then a short pass to Kelce, touchdown, huge drive between Smith and Kelce. Just a fantastic execution. Then Marcus Peters breaks up a pass on defense, one-on-one against Calvin Johnson. The Marcus Peters thing that really blows my mind, that I hope everybody listening now, I hope you either have seen this or you hear this and you understand how big of a deal it is. And I would say that like 90% of my interactions with people who've listened to the show have been positive interactions, and you're smart football fans, so you've either seen this or you will get it, which is great, by the way. I really appreciate that. Marcus Peters is predominantly not getting thrown at. Revis Island is called that not just because whenever you throw it towards the receiver, Revis is just always in the way. It's because whoever ends up against Darrell Revis is on an island, and you don't look at him anymore. You don't find him anymore. You don't throw at whoever Darrell Revis is covering. It's how it was with Nnamdi Asamoah in his heyday. You didn't throw at him because bad things happened when you did. Even if he was on your best guy, even if Darrell Revis was matched up against, I don't know, Larry Fitzgerald. If Darrell Revis was matched up against Larry Fitzgerald, you didn't throw to Larry Fitzgerald anymore. If you were a Cardinal, then you went to Anquan Boldin, and that went fine, probably. But that's the kind of respect Marcus Peters is getting right now. Calvin Johnson had 5 catches in this game, and I wish I had this stat ahead of me, but I don't think it's out yet. I don't know how many of those were against Marcus Peters, but it wasn't all 5. And even if it was, that'd be a heck of a victory for Marcus Peters to hold Calvin Johnson even under 100 yards. He's the best thing the Lions have. But even adding on to that, not only is it a huge sign of respect when you don't throw at Darrell Revis, you didn't throw at Nnamdi Asamoah, Joe Hayden sometimes had this, Patrick Peterson gets some of this hype. Marcus Peters is a rookie. And this has been happening for several weeks now. I think even against the Broncos, Peyton Manning was picking on Jamel Fleming, so he didn't really need to challenge Marcus Peters. But that was week 2. And then even the Bengals and the Packers, and especially his last few weeks, Peters has slip-ups. I'm not acting like he hasn't made one mistake or acting like he hasn't given up one completion. But he is a rookie cornerback, one of the hardest positions to play in football, and one of the most important positions. He's a rookie who's played less than half of a season, or had played less than half of a season, who isn't even getting tested most of the time right now. Whoever goes up against Marcus Peters, they're just trying to find somewhere else to go with the ball. And that is unbelievable. For a rookie to step into the game, and somebody, it might have been Ian Rappaport, I'm not sure who it was, but it was someone in that general vicinity. So watching Marcus Peters just look natural. The speed of the game is not too quick for him. And that is, be excited about Marcus Peters. And you might not hear his name very much because he's not getting thrown at, but that means he's taking the other team's best outside weapon and he's going away. He's disappearing. Calvin Johnson disappeared for huge stretches of this game. So, enormous respect to Marcus Peters from opposing quarterbacks. As a rookie corner, that's a hard thing to do. I mean, again, 8 games into his career, he looks like a really phenomenal first-round draft pick. And then, as I say, that Chiefs have to punt. Peters got beat by Calvin Johnson for the first time. Then Johnson got open again, lined up elsewhere, not against Marcus Peters. Then Stafford splits Sean Smith and Derek Johnson to hit Golden Tate. Then Houston gets a sack for the 5th sack of the day for the Chiefs. Then on 4th and 8, Houston gets another one. Half of that sack went to Tomba. 6 sacks on the day. Turnover on downs. And the Chiefs on 3rd and 8, Smith hits Macklin about 4 yards deep, which makes me upset whenever they throw passes 4 yards short of the first down marker. Macklin gets stopped. Chiefs have to punt back. Lions punt back again. DeAnthony Thomas takes a beautiful return for 37 yards, again with some great patience. I know if you listen to the show throughout the season, there are a few things you take away. You've got to be taking away. And I wonder, if there are things you think I talk about unbelievably often, tweet me at JB Briscoe. I'd be curious to see what you think I say all the time. because I talk a lot and I can't keep track. But I feel like I talk about patience and vision for runners and the respect that Marcus Peters is getting. I think those are my two favorite things right now. Because it's positive stuff to talk about. And I would rather, and I know this is not true. This is not true for everybody. Not true for all fans. Not true for all podcasts. Not true for all talk radio people. I'm a Chiefs fan. And I would much rather talk about the good things going on with this team. However, when stuff is bad, like the season as it started and like the season will probably end, I am not afraid to talk about the negative stuff because it needs to be talked about. It's educating all of us on what's actually going on. And it's real. It's what's really happening. I think if you're a real hardcore Chiefs fan, and I don't have a problem with casual fans, but if you're listening to this show, I think you're probably a hardcore Chiefs fan. If you're a hardcore Chiefs fan and bad stuff happens, you want to hear about it because it's real. It's what's going on. It's what's happening with your team. Try to figure out how to fix it, how the front office should be fixing it, whatever. But I would rather talk about a good team. I've had more fun talking about the Royals just in conversation since they've been good. A local team winning a championship. And man, again, sorry for the sidetrack. But if you're a Chiefs fan and either in Kansas City or elsewhere, and you were either at the parade for the Royals or you've seen the pictures or watched some of it on TV, which is what I ended up doing because there were 800,000 people there. This Kansas City might be a baseball town at this point, and I'm completely okay with that because it's a sports town. If there was an NBA team in Kansas City, it would be a basketball town for part of the year. There's no threat to the Chiefs. I could not care less if this town is more baseball than football. But can you imagine a Chiefs Super Bowl win and that party? Because for me, I'm very, very happy for a Royals victory. It's been a blast. But I'm a Chiefs fan before anything else. And to see this team win in Kansas City would be unbelievable. And seeing this happen with the Royals has made the idea of a Chiefs Super Bowl victory more enticing because I can see what it would be like on some level, except for I'd probably do a lot of crying. Anyway, after the D'Anthony Thomas return, Alex Smith hits Jeremy Maclin for a 17-yard touchdown. My stupid, stupid, stupid stat of the day is that Kansas City Chiefs wide receivers have more receiving touchdowns internationally this season than they did in America all of last year, because no Chiefs receiver caught a touchdown pass last year. I'm not sure if you've heard that stat. No one really talks about it on national broadcasts or anything like that. Late slip-up, 21-yard touchdown for the Lions, Stafford to Moore. Chiefs recover the onside kick. Great run by Charcandrick West, barely held back from the toudown. Would have ended up breaking his 100 yards on that run. The offensive line really caved to the edge in. West saw where to go and took it. Again, the vision of West developing is really exciting because that's what he needs to continue to develop to become a real NFL running back with real potential. I mean, he already has real potential, but to achieve that potential, he'll reach that by developing that patience, that vision. So a 32-yard run ended with a horse collar tackle. And then the ball punched into the end zone by Spencer Ware, who gets the goal line carry. He looked good in the preseason. I'm glad he's back on the roster, even though it's only because Jamal Charles is hurt. I like Spencer Ware. And then Chase Daniel is in the game. If you would have told me that Chase Daniel and Spencer Ware would have been in the game in the fourth quarter in London against the Lions, I would have assumed that things went very, very, very differently. I would have thought some very bad things. I thought, oh my gosh, the Chiefs went to London against a 1-6 team, and the offensive line fell apart. The defense looked terrible. Maybe Justin Houston disappeared again. Alex Smith must have been terrible. Maybe West got hurt. Nope, not at all. The Chiefs were just up by 35 points. So, what do we take away from this game? I'll first admit that yes, the Lions are a bad team. I understand this very well. But you have to play bad teams. They're on the schedule. And you have to beat bad teams if you're a good team or even an average team, a team with a hope. The Chiefs didn't do that at home against the Bears. But you have to beat bad teams. Ideally, you beat them badly. Going to London, as I said, weird tweak, and it's going into a bye week. This game is enough to, in my opinion, start asking questions about what the Chiefs can do in the back half of their schedule. At 3-5, are they going to be able to win 6 or 7 of their last 8 and go get a wild card spot? I don't think so. But if this team shows up, if this offense, defense, and special teams show up for the next 8 games, they finish the season 6-2 against a schedule with one winning team on it, the Denver Broncos, next week. I guess so. I guess they could. I don't think they will. And maybe I'll change my tune if they go win in Denver. I will tell you that a 4-5 team is going to make the playoffs. If the Chiefs go win in Denver after the bye week, I will tell you that a 4-5 team is going to make the playoffs. I don't think that's going to happen. I'll talk about that game a lot next week, but I currently think the Chiefs will lose in Denver. So then a 3-6 team is going to be looking at the last 7 games, needing to definitely win 6 of them. Going to go 6-1 to finish the season? Probably not. But I feel like throwing out that hypothetical situation right now is justified because of how this game went. If the Chiefs would have won 20-17, I'd be sitting here telling you the same stuff I was talking about last week. Saying, yeah, there's stuff to root for here, stuff to watch. Some good things, some bad things. But this team isn't going anywhere. Well, this team just stomped on a really terrible team. It's what good teams need to do. And maybe the most encouraging thing is, although they're 2-2 in the last 4 weeks, in the last 4 games, the Chiefs are +7 in turnover differential. That's something to take away. That's something the Chiefs have not had under Andy Reid, predominantly, at least the back half of last year, beginning of this year, or really all of last year and the beginning of this year. Turnover differential is hugely important in the NFL, obviously. And if they pull that off against the Broncos, if they are +4 in the turnover differential in Denver, I don't know, cross your fingers, see what happens. I really, really, really wish this team would have beaten the Bears at home when they should have, and arguably have beaten the Vikings on the road when they should have. Because talking about a 5-3 team right now would be incredibly interesting. Talking about a 4-4 team right now, I could get into. But the reality is sitting at 3-5 with one really nice victory. At this point, I'm fine with hope. I support your hopefulness if you have it, but I completely understand and also feel the pessimism that is living in your heart. Now I'm going to do that thing I do where I talk about Patreon for just a minute. patreon.com/RTK is the place where you can help this show in the most substantial way. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but if I need to do a freestyle on the show to get you to support the show, I think I'll do it. I think I'm willing to do that. Four people, though, who did not need me to rap to throw some money at this show: Ty Declare at TyDeclare44 on Twitter, Jason Essler, Ben Rahman, and Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander on Twitter are four people who have kept this show running for, they're in the 3rd month of being a patron of the show now. And so what Patreon is, I've heard it described as a virtual tipping and rewards website. What you can do if you go to the page, you can donate a little bit of money, you can throw a little bit. Think of me as a musician on the side of the road, but instead of a musician, I'm talking about the Chiefs constantly. And you could put a little bit of money in my tin can sitting out in front of me and help keep this show going. You can keep food in my belly. You can help put a mic stand in my quote-unquote studio, whatever it may be. Help pay for hosting for the iTunes page. And if you're listening to the show on Arrowhead Addict, that's awesome, and I'm glad you're here, especially because I'd like to have more people on Arrowhead Addict in the comments and having that conversation. But if you're listening to the show on Arrowhead Addict, go to the show on iTunes and subscribe through iTunes, or if you need to subscribe on an Android device or something, you can do that on any Android podcasting app. search for the show and subscribe to the Ref and the Kicker, iTunes or Android, whatever podcasting app you need to use, that feed. And that feed is up and running for the number of people that are listening to the show because we exceeded the cap for the hosting site that I use. So these patrons on Patreon are keeping that free and keeping that running for everybody who's listening. So if you're listening through iTunes, you can be thanking those four people that I just named off. It's very hard for small shows to monetize their podcasts, even just to the point of being able to pay for hosting things, for equipment or whatever that may be. And I don't want to force people to pay for this show through subscriptions or anything like that. And so currently running the show with no subscription fees, no advertisers, the way that I am happy to get to do it right now is to say, if you really love this show and really are glad it's here and you want to make sure it sticks around and hopefully continues to get better, just if you want to, you can help do that financially. And that's through patreon.com/RTK. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. I love to have interactions with people listening to the show. Questions, comments, thoughts. There are times now when people will just see something interesting and tag me on Twitter, and we'll be able to talk about it. And that's awesome. I love to be able to do that. If you have a longer message you want to talk about, especially, now if you zoned out for the Patreon bit, come back in here. Listen up. Especially for next week, the Chiefs are going to be on a bye. There's not going to be a game for me to talk about on the show. I want to know your thoughts on the Broncos game coming up, and if you think the Chiefs have a puncher's chance, a snowball's chance in hell, or you think they'll win, whatever you might think. I want to hear your observations on the upcoming Broncos game, because that's going to be a huge part of the show, obviously. And anything else you want to talk about. If you have a longer message like that, facebook.com/RTK show. Or get into the comments on Arrowhead Addict, then we can all interact. Listeners, me, writers for the site, whatever, anybody who wants to show up. And as always, just tell people about the show. There are Chiefs fans in your life. I know there are. If you think they'd like to hear more about the Chiefs, like to get in a little deeper maybe, tell them there's this really great podcast hosted by a handsome and talented young man who would love to have your listening ears tuned in every single week. For the second straight episode, this is going to be a longer show than I expected. I must have talked a lot, and if that's a bad thing, I'm sorry. If it's a good thing, you're welcome. Adam Schefter did a little write-up on ESPN.com about some trades that should happen but won't happen before the trade deadline. He was right about the last part. None of them happened at the trade deadline, but I think at least one of them here is very interesting because it involves the Kansas City Chiefs. Trade is Washington trades quarterback Robert Griffin III to Kansas City for quarterback Chase Daniel. Chiefs coach Andy Reid liked Griffin III coming out of the draft. Brad Childress is a Kansas City spread game analyst, and the Chiefs could have a quarterback their head coach could groom to run it. Perfect. In turn, Washington would acquire another intriguing quarterback alternative, someone the Chiefs have shopped despite the fact that he was impressive in the preseason. So casually, Schefter mentioned the Chiefs are shopping Chase Daniel, or were shopping Chase Daniel, which I think is interesting just on its own. But we've talked about RG3, I think in the preseason at least, we talked about RG3 with Andy Reid. Andy Reid was at his best with Donovan McNabb, he was good with Nick Foles, and he was good with Michael Vick. And of all those guys, the best comparison for Griffin, I think, is Michael Vick. Although, Andy Reid made Nick Foles look like an awfully good quarterback, and he's not that good of a quarterback. If he could do some of that same stuff with Robert Griffin and his second team with his second scenario here, I don't have as much faith in Andy Reid as a lot of people do, I guess, at this point, because I've watched him too closely. But I would have been completely okay with this trade for a couple of reasons. One, there were one of the reasons it didn't happen, at least first I should say, is because RG3's contract is too much. It's big. He has a large contract. It would have been a cap issue. But Chase Daniel, as I've said consistently, is just like a step down from Alex Smith, and I feel like Aaron Murray's probably a step down from Chase Daniel. They're all kind of the same quarterback. If I'm the Chiefs with Alex Smith, I'm not just looking for a backup quarterback, especially at this point in the season when you're 3-5. I'm not just looking for a quarterback who could come in and win one game. In some cases in the NFL, that's super important, and I get it. But for the Chiefs right now, it's not. If Alex Smith gets hurt, this team's extra. I mean, they continue to be done. I don't know what to tell you. But if you bring in a developmental guy, and really, maybe Aaron Murray becomes the backup quarterback if this trade would have happened. But you bring in a guy that has a very high ceiling, rookie of the year, a guy who we've seen him do great stuff on an NFL level. And maybe you can say all this stuff about Colin Kaepernick also, I don't know. But we've seen him do great stuff on an NFL level, and with Griffin, he was hideously mishandled, not only medically, but then by the coaching shift in Washington. Griffin, I think, has had some really bad situations. Possibly in some ways comparable to Alex Smith's early career, where he had to play for a jillion different coordinators. Now RG3's had a coach who hates him for the last couple of seasons. Plus, Chase Daniel's gone after this year. The Chiefs, he won't be around next year anyway. So I would have been happy about this trade just to see the Chiefs try to develop RG3. And obviously, it already didn't happen, so I understand I'm kind of talking the past a little bit. But I think there's a really interesting comparison to something that happened in the NFL that the Chiefs need to be very careful about going into the future. If they were to trade it for RG3 and then to place all of their faith in him as the sole quarterback of the future, they'd be making a huge mistake. And I think this is also relevant even with just Alex Smith. I really love this comparison, so I'm happy about this. Last week I talked about the fact that I believe, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I don't know, the fact that I believe the Chiefs ought to be taking a quarterback in, I'll say, at the minimum, the first three rounds next year. The Broncos took Brock Osweiler in the second round, and he's just sitting there. The Packers obviously took Aaron Rodgers, and he sat behind Brett Favre for 45 years while Brett Favre tried to not retire. It's okay to invest in a quarterback, although in both of those cases, they could afford to do that because those were good teams who didn't need that much else. So using a high draft pick on a quarterback was okay because their offensive line was good enough, or, you know, or their defense was already built, whatever it may be. And the Chiefs aren't in that good of a situation. But the Chiefs should draft a quarterback next year, minimum the first three rounds. I'd say the first two. And if they took a quarterback with the 15th pick or wherever they end up, wouldn't bug me one bit. Not one bit. But look back to the Seattle Seahawks. The Seattle Seahawks signed Matt Flynn to, I think it was 3 years, $19 million. It wasn't superstar quarterback money, but it was big enough. It was enough money. And I went back after I came up with this and read an early write-up about the battle in camp between Matt Flynn and Russell Wilson. The Seahawks signed Matt Flynn to be their starting quarterback. Make no mistake of that. To be their starting quarterback. But then the quarterback from Wisconsin slides in the draft a little bit. The Seahawks go, let's take a shot on this Russell Wilson guy. And they do, and it changes the fate of their franchise for the next 10 years. Also, Wilson outperformed Matt Flynn, and the Seahawks didn't get defensive. They didn't go, oh no, this rookie just beat out our incoming starter who has a bunch of guaranteed money. No. They went, oh, good problem. We just had a young rookie quarterback perform really, really well. Let's give him his time. And the Chiefs need to do that also. Now, next year, if a rookie is surpassing Alex Smith, I might be saying something different because of how the cap works out. It'd be a lot of dead money to put on the bench. But if a rookie quarterback comes in and lights it up in the preseason and you want to start him, I'm not going to complain about it. Great, do it. Let's see what happens. But you cannot do what Scott Pioli did when he was in Kansas City and say, all right, I've got my quarterback, Matt Castle's here for some draft picks and a lot of money. We're set. Don't look at the field. Don't tell me how he's actually doing. Don't remind me that he had one good year and that we need to have somebody behind him as a contingency plan, maybe even draft a young quarterback and try to develop someone behind him. No! We got Matt Castle. We don't need anybody else. Not even the Packers did that with Brett Favre. The Broncos haven't done that with Peyton Manning. If you have a young stud quarterback, if you're the Panthers and you got Cam Newton Andrew Luck has looked weird, but you got Andrew Luck or you've got, heck, Matt Ryan, you don't need to take quarterback in the second round. You need to give your quarterback weapons and an offensive line. But if you've got an aging kind of middle-of-the-road quarterback, or either of those, an aging quarterback or a middle-of-the-road quarterback or anything in between, draft a quarterback. Yes, missing on a really, really high first-round draft pick can set your franchise back. But if you hit on a quarterback, it will set your franchise forward so, so much. Teams cannot be afraid to pay a quarterback. Chiefs did it with Alex Smith. And then to also look to develop someone else. Now, the Chiefs gave Tyler Bray an extension, who has not played an NFL snap, regular season snap. So maybe they're seeing something there that literally no one else on the planet is seeing. That's fine. That's great. If they think they can develop Tyler Bray, Godspeed. I'd love to see it. He's got a cannon. They got Aaron Murray, who doesn't get active ever. Not real thrilled. I think he's probably, as I said, he's Chase Daniel. Woohoo. But it's a young quarterback. Young quarterbacks are exciting because they have potential that we don't know about yet. So there's a short little quarterback diatribe to wet your whistles for the draft. Now just, what, 5 short months away? God. Hey, I have an idea. Let's talk about the Broncos, but not for very long because it's going to make me feel bad. The Broncos looked really, really good against the Green Bay Packers on Sunday Night Football. As I said earlier, the Alex Smith had more rushing yards than Aaron Rodgers had passing yards against the Broncos. The Broncos defense held the Packers offense to 10 points in Denver. And Denver's offense looked the best it's looked all year, which is not what I expected from Peyton Manning. I didn't expect them to hit their stride in week 7. Expected Manning to take a slope down, but he looks like he might be starting to gel in the Kubiak offense a little bit. CJ Anderson had 100 yards and a touchdown. It was utter domination. The Packers' leading receiver was Randall Cobb, who had 6 receptions for 27 yards. Aaron Rodgers had 14 completions for 77 yards. Manning was 21 for 29, 340. I threw a pick. It's okay because your defense, Peyton, is made of cyborgs. The Broncos scored the first 17 points, and then they scored the last 12. The Broncos, man, not only did I think they were sliding before the season, and I still think Peyton Manning's time is limited, but he looked kind of decrepit for a while, and he doesn't anymore, not, at least not in this game. And seeing Aaron Rodgers get absolutely rattled around is very strange and not good. Watching the Lions game in the morning, and like whatever I said, 8:30 in the morning, compared to watching the Broncos for the bits that weren't Royals games at 8:30 at night, those 12 hours changed my thoughts on the Denver game by a lot. Because I saw the Chiefs team and said, if this offense shows up like this, and they can just hold their own a little bit against the Broncos defense, and then the Chiefs defense shows up like this, they can rattle Peyton Manning, and the Chiefs could maybe win a game 20-17 in Denver. I don't feel great about that anymore. I don't know if the Broncos are going to fail to score 20 points all season. In fact, they're probably not, and I don't know if the Chiefs are going to be able to score 17 in Denver. The Packers just scored 10. I failed to mention, the Broncos just traded for Vernon Davis just because, you know, adding another weapon. And they almost got Joe Thomas, the offensive lineman from Cleveland. And Adam Schefter said it was unbelievably close. The Broncos were reportedly trying to move around cap money to make space for Joe Thomas. And I don't like that. But it didn't happen. So great. They've got a 7-0 record. The Chiefs play them after the bye week. And it looks like it could be ugly. And again, the Chiefs season, I wouldn't say far from over, as some headline read, but it's not over. It's going to be really, really hard to get to a wild card spot if their first game after this 2-game winning streak is a loss in Denver, but it looks like it's going to be. That's going to do it for this episode of Roughing the Kicker on ArrowheadAddict.com, Arrowhead Addict Radio. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Blah, 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 blah. I'm Josh Briscoe on Twitter at JB Briscoe. As always, talk to me there. Talk to me in long form on the Facebook page, facebook.com/RTK show. I was talking to one of my friends a couple days ago, and I was saying I've got about 500 Twitter followers, but I've got way more people that listen to this podcast. So I feel like you guys just only want to hear me in audio form, which I can only imagine is because of my booming natural radio voice. As always, though, thank you for however you support this show. Just by listening and listening through this whole thing, I am greatly appreciative to have your ears and to have your conversation. This show is worth it and fun to do because I know you're listening. So thank you once again. Let me know what you want to hear in the bi-week show. And until that comes around, I'm going to be petitioning the league to see if the Chiefs could just play the Lions 16 times, preferably all in London next year.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?